He was the riverboat gambler of the patriarchs. A conniving con man who could talk his way out of anything. And his name was Jacob. And in Genesis chapter 32, his life forever changed. Because in Genesis chapter 32, Jacob is called to wrestle with God. And all night long, the two tossed and tumbled in the mud of the Jabbok River. And then the dawn broke, and it was over. And out walked Jacob with a limp. But he was a new man, and he was never the same again. Join us, if you can, tomorrow night at 7:30. As I want to talk to you out of the 32nd chapter of the book of Genesis, in a sermon I like to call In the Mud of the Jabbok. In that passage in Genesis 32, verses 22 through 32, that's, I suppose, as interesting as it is perplexing, where a man has to wrestle with God. And yet I think we can learn some things from the life of Jacob and from that encounter, and say some things, hopefully, of pertinent application to our day and time. And I hope you'll come and be with us tomorrow night at 7:30. I know Saturday evening during a Monday through Sunday evening a lot of times is a kind of a down night. Everybody gets tired and all of that kind of thing. But I think if you'll put forth the effort, we can take a scripture that maybe you've never heard talked about before or preached on before, and maybe shine a little light, give some insight, and help us all to have a better understanding and appreciation of it. Thank you for coming tonight. Those of you who are visiting with us, some have come from a long way off, distant places to be with us, from other congregations. Some of you have brought young people with you, and I think that's tremendous. That's great, and I appreciate that so very much. And it's good to see old friends again and to renew acquaintances and that kind of thing. And just suffice it to say at this moment, thank you very much for encouraging us in this effort of preaching the gospel. Turn, if you will, this evening to the book of Ecclesiastes. To the book of Ecclesiastes. We appreciate so very much Sister Neff in loaning us her sheet off of her bed for the chart. And she may take it down afterwards and take it home. And then she maybe can bring it back tomorrow night. I don't know. But be sure and thank her for the use of her sheet. We appreciate that. All right, turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes is, in my opinion, the journal of a wise old king known to you and I as Solomon. And Solomon did something in his life that I suppose everybody would like to do, and that is Solomon tried out life. He lived life with all of the gusto that you can imagine. He fulfilled every dream. He pursued every pleasure. He tried to walk in every area of satisfaction, because what Solomon wanted to do more than anything else was to experience the good life. And yet in his quest for the good life, Solomon made a lot of mistakes. And I believe, and it's just my opinion, that he writes the book of Ecclesiastes from the vantage point of an older person who has experienced everything that life has to offer. He writes to young people whose lives are yet unwritten. And one of the major themes of the book of Ecclesiastes is Solomon's words to youth in saying, don't make the same mistakes that I made. Let's read in the 11th chapter tonight, beginning in verse 7, through the 12th chapter in the first verse. Solomon says, the light is pleasant, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all, and let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood. And follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes, yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. So remove vexation from your heart, and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, I have no pleasure in them. That is, I suppose, an incredible amount of advice, not only for young people, but I believe it to be for all people. And so tonight, in the time we have available, let's just go to the text and let's pull out some things and shine the spotlight and see if we can say some things to really make what Solomon says pertinent and applicable in a way that we can appreciate them. I want you to notice, first of all, this evening that Solomon gives us permission. He gives us permission to enjoy life. Notice in verse 7, he says, "The light is pleasant, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun." Now keep in mind that this is picturesque speech. This is symbolic Hebrew poetry. It's inspired poetry, but it's poetry nonetheless. And if you look in these words, you can see a little hint of romance, of rhythmic beauty. There's color in the wise man's counsel as he tells us how to live each day of our lives. What are you saying, Solomon? Solomon says, "I'm saying that God means for you to walk outside and to look up at the sun and to really enjoy living." Solomon is telling us to maximize life. He is telling us to get the most out of every day that we possibly can. You know, God didn't create us to put us on earth so that we could be miserable and make everybody else miserable. So that we could go around with the, "Woe is me, life is the pits, gloom, despair, and agony on me" personality. He didn't do that. Verse 7, he says, "The light is pleasant and it is good. It is good for the eyes to see the sun." But now notice verse 8. He says, "Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all." Boy, I love that. Solomon says, happiness is to pervade all of the years of your life. He's saying you don't have to wait to reach some kind of magical age before you can crack open the door of happiness. No, sir. He said, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all. In other words, if you're a young person tonight, Solomon is telling you that God wants you to enjoy life right now. He wants you to enjoy living right now. And if you're a middle-aged person, like John Gertler, he's telling you to maximize life right now. And if you're an old person like Bob Rice, God's telling you to maximize life right now. It doesn't make any difference how old you are or how young you are. That's beside the point. Whatever age you are right now, Solomon says, make the most out of life. Why is it that we always have the tendency to attribute happiness to another age group? Older people have the idea, and they voice it many times. They'll say, you know, to be happy, you've got to be young. And we live in a nation, a country that I think is immersed in that concept, that is baptized in the cult of youth worship. And the reason that is because we think that only young people can really be happy. Well, there is some truth to that. There is something about young people that is admirable by older people. We admire their vitality. We admire their indefatigable energy. We admire their confidence level. We admire their positiveness. We admire their hope. We admire their physical attractiveness. I mean, face it, folks. Flat tummies and silk hair and smooth skin is far superior to the done lapped over disease and bald heads and Ben Gay. There's just something a little bit superior to the former over the latter. It's called middle age. You know, when you get to be middle age, you have to start making adjustments in certain areas that you didn't have to make them before. All of a sudden, things start showing up in the medicine cabinet that didn't used to be there. And as one fellow said, you know, the older I get, the longer it takes for me to get ready to go to bed. He said, I've got to put on stuff. He said, I got to take out stuff. He said, I got to do all this kind of thing, and it just takes longer to get ready to go to bed. I mean, here are bodies that once climbed mountains, and now they need a jump start just to get from the table into the lazy boy, you know. As one guy said, he said, I set out to do 10 push-ups. And he said, it wasn't that I couldn't do them. He said, I couldn't remember which one I was on. And so we get to that point in our life and we begin to think a little bit and we begin to say, wow, I wish I was 17 all over again. Well, before you wish you were 17 all over again, let me raise a question. Since when is being a teenager all that easy? You see, the older people look at it this way. Older people say, to be happy, you got to be young. And the younger people say, you can't be happy until you can grow up and get away from home and get out on your own, you see. And so as a result, we always attribute happiness to another age group, to another time. And that's no good. If you think teenagers have the corner on happiness, just look around. Look around at the kids at school. Look around at the kids at the mall. And you'll see kids that are not the epitome of happiness at all. It staggers the mind to even contemplate it, and we even hesitate to talk about it. But suicide has reached epidemic proportions among our young people in this country. And what that says is, I think, is that there are a lot of young kids who aren't very happy. And so in our admiration for youth, in our devotion for youth, we have the tendency to forget sometimes that young people have special problems. They have special needs. In fact, the truth of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, being a teenager at the turn of the 1990s is tough. It's not easy. Being a teenager means a daily struggle to get in touch with yourself and really come to grips with who I am. Now, we older people can kind of laugh that off a little bit, but that's tough. And a daily struggle with peer pressure, and that's tougher. And peculiar problems of adolescence that maybe older people can just laugh off and not think are any big deal, but they are a big deal. And they were a big deal when you were that age, if you can remember then. Solomon gives some advice I want to talk to you about in verse 9. Some advice to teenagers. He says, rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Now, that's not the traditional advice that teenagers usually receive, but that's what the Bible says. Solomon turns to young people and he says, young person, young man, young lady, he says unto them, maximize your life right now. Enjoy your life right now in these teenage years. Get the most out of it that you possibly can. He's saying, have some fun. That's what he's saying. He's saying the teenage years offers for you the possibility of being the best years of your life. Don't waste this period of time counting the days until you can leave home so that you can go away from home to get happy, because that won't happen. I love what George Bernard Shaw said one time. He said, youth is such a wonderful thing that it's a shame we waste it on young people. And that's right. Because for some young people it is a waste because they don't appreciate it. what they have. And Solomon says, learn to appreciate what you have right now. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood. And let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood. He says, be happy right now. If you have not gone shopping with a teenager lately, you ain't lived. That's right, isn't it? Back in 1979, my wife and I, before we had children, decided that we wanted to do something to enrich our family and to enrich our lives, and we did. We were able, through the United Way Big Brothers program, to get a young man at that point who was 10. And we began to work with Steve and to do some things with him. And as time went on, to make a long story short, he became one of our family, as close as anybody could ever become without being legally adopted. People say sometimes, how many kids do you have? And they're surprised oftentimes when to learn that I've got an 18-year-old freshman in college. Well, that's kind of with an asterisk. But we've watched Steve grow up, and he spent a lot of time in our home. And then last year, in January, a young lady who is 19 had some difficulties and some trouble, and we took her in. And so Helen lived with us for a year until she went to Florida College along with Steve. They're both freshmen at Florida College. Steve's going to work with us this summer as a young preacher in a training program where I preach. But Steve and Helen are a part of our home. And why I say that is that I know a little bit about some of the anxieties and some of the problems that teenagers go through these days. Steve and Helen have given us some insight into those particular areas. I've seen Steve lay on the... He'd kill me if he knew I was telling you this. I've seen him lay on the living room floor and roll in anxiety because of the fact that he goofed up his calendar and asked two girls out on the same night. I've seen him do that. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I've agonized with him in that area. But we love those kids. And it's kind of like seeing a preview of a movie that you're not sure you want to see in your own kids later on. But it's been fun. But if you haven't been shopping with a teenager, You missed out. That's all I can say. You go to the store with a 13-year-old and you've got something in mind to pick out for him to wear. Or you've got something in mind to pick out for her to wear, and I only have one thing to say to you about that. You might as well forget it, because their opinion's going to differ from yours. A couple of years ago, Steve and I went shopping. I had to have some blue jeans, and so we went over to Macy's department store nearby where I live, and I went to look at the ties and all of that kind of thing, and I sent him over to pick me out a pair of blue jeans. I told him what size to get, and he went off over there. Blue jeans are blue jeans to me, and so I said, go get me a pair of blue jeans. So I'm coming back to the blue jean department, he's coming back to the tie department, and we meet. And I said, what are those? And he said, those are your blue jeans. I said, they're not my blue jeans. Those are used blue jeans. He said, no, man. He said, that's the way things are. It's stonewashed. I said, come on. I'm going to show you what I want. So we went back. Do you know, in Macy's, three floors of department stores, they did not have one pair of new blue jeans? I paid $30 for a pair of new, old blue jeans. And got home and got my old blue jeans out of the closet and compared. And my old blue jeans that I was trying to replace were in better shape than my new old blue jeans that I just paid $30 for. But that's called style, I guess. Right, Jared? That's called style. These kids are fun. They've got fun ideas. They're always making little comments. Their attention span sometimes is about 3 seconds long. But they're always going for jokes. They're always into fun. I remember one time we were sitting in Pizza Hut with a bunch of us after church on a Sunday night. I'm running my mouth telling some story. And I wasn't paying any attention. I said, pass me the peppers. And so they passed me the little pepper sprinkles, you know. Unbeknownst to me, Steve had undone the lid. And I turned those peppers upside down on my pizza and it made a mountain. Well, they all thought that was funny and everything. And so I got them all back in there that I could. It still left a lot on there. And I just decided I would show them that I was man enough to eat that pizza. And that was the dumbest thing I believe I've ever done. Now I want to ask you something. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that kind of innocent fun? I'll answer the question for you. Not a thing. Not a thing. He says, rejoice, young man, during your childhood. Let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood. And follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. I get so tired of older people always harping on young people saying, you ought to get serious about life. Get serious about life. I have a question. What for? What is the big deal of encouraging a 13-year-old kid to get serious about life? You see, the problem in America that we're facing today, ladies and gentlemen, is that we don't let our children be children anymore. We want to take a 7-year-old and make him into a 13-year-old, and we want to take a 13-year-old and make her into a 21-year-old. Let's let our kids be kids. And let's let them enjoy the youthful years of their life. And as older people, quit putting pressure on them to grow up before their time. Amen. Their time will come. And it'll come sooner than you and I want it to. Solomon says in verse 9, he says, kids, he says, have a ball. He says, have some fun. He says, enjoy your youthful years. Really get after it. Have a good time. Now, you don't hear that advice very often from the pulpit. And you don't often hear that advice from your parents either. But that's what Solomon says. I remember one night, a couple of years ago, 4 able bodies slipped out under a full moon in the darkness of the night, wearing black and looking like a group of people going on a sabotage mission on Hogan Heroes. And they went down into southern Maryland armed with 12 rolls of toilet paper. They were after a particular deacon in the local church who was a practical joker, who was always after people and always pulling jokes and always pulling pranks. And those people decided that it was about time for him to get his. And so they went down there and they rolled his iron fence in and out and around his house and bushes. I want to tell you something. They had the best time you've ever seen. It looked like it had snowed on that guy's house. And then last summer, Bob, at about 3 o'clock in the morning, I heard on my front door, bam, 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 and I got out there, and I mean, it had snowed at my house. And I got Steve up. I said, Steve, go out there and clean all that up. Now I want to ask you something, seriously. What's wrong with it? I'm not talking about vandalizing. I'm not talking about doing some things that's destructive to property. I'm not talking about doing things that offend people. That's not appropriate in every case. I'm just trying to find one example of something that oftentimes a young person may get into and do that really doesn't harm anything. And there may be 100 other examples. If you don't like that one, choose another one. All I'm saying is, ladies and gentlemen, I'll give you a choice. I'll give you a choice. Would you rather pick up beer cans from your front lawn or toilet paper? I want to tell you something. If you try to suppress all of the innocent youthful activity that your kids will ever get into, if you try to suppress it all, I'll guarantee you that you'll be picking up the former and not the latter. Because your kids will have a tendency to rebel. I'm saying to you, cut a little slack. I'm not encouraging vandalism or anything like that. I wouldn't do that at all. I'm simply trying to give you an application of what I believe the kind of thing Solomon's talking about. He turns to young people and he says, hey, enjoy your youthful years. Have a good time. I think sometimes older people forget the thrill of youth. Older people, don't let middle-aged or old age turn you into a cynic. Nothing says when you get to be up middle age that you have to be a cynical person. I've seen some people that get up to middle age that say, okay, I got to be mature now, and they stand in front of a mirror and it looks like from their personal experience that they must practice frowning for 8 hours a day. Don't do that. Solomon is saying to us, enjoy life all of the years of your life, every day of your life, as long as you shall live. But look in verse 9. Yet, know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. Did you ever notice that God always inserts just enough warning to make sure that we stay in bounds and that we don't run too far and that we don't get carried away? He says to youth, relax, have fun in childhood, have a super time in your youth, yet don't forget there will be a day of accountability. Now, young people hear that and they say, oh, I really enjoyed the first part of the sermon, but you just took the fun out of everything. No, I didn't. Do you know what would happen to our lives if there was no anchor on the tether? Do you know what kind of trouble we'd get into that if we went out and just did our own thing without any consideration that there is a God and one day we'll be accountable and have to stand before Him? Do you know what would happen? You see, too many people in their maddening drive for happiness and pleasure have mentally canceled out any kind of responsibility and accountability to God. And you give those people a few years, and they'll be the saddest people on the face of the earth. The people who just run wild. They'll be the people with the broken marriages. They'll be the people with the chemical dependencies. They'll be the people with the burned out bodies. They'll be the people who will die before their time. Why? Because they ran wild. They took a little liberty and they ran to extremes. They thought they could find freedom without responsibility, and they paid the price. Solomon says, remember this, my young friend. He says, God will bring you to judgment for all these things. What that says to me is that God is compassionate. He doesn't put this warning in the text to take the fun out of life. He puts the warning in the text so that you and I can keep the fun in our lives. He doesn't want you to ruin your life. He's trying to regulate it so that you can get the most out of it without ruining yourself. But now notice in verse 10, he says, I want you to remove vexation from your heart. Remove vexation from your heart. If you take the word vexation and you do a word study on that word, you will find that that word basically has to do with two things. It has to do with anger on the one hand and resentment on the other hand. Now, I want to tell you something. You do a little addition and you take anger and you add resentment to it and you will get rebellion. And that's what the term vexation has to do with. It has to do with rebellion. And what Solomon is saying is, young people, don't ruin your life through rebellion. Don't have a rebellious spirit. He says, don't do that. Nobody's happy when there's rebellion in the house. It makes everybody miserable. Now, I want to say something, and I hope all of you will listen. If you don't get anything else out of my lesson, if you get this, I will be happy and satisfied and pleased. But I want to say something to you. Young people, love your parents. I know that sounds elementary, maybe old-fashioned, but love your parents. I was coming down one day for lunch on a Saturday. I've got this old sweater. I know it's dumb. And I know the elbows are about out of that thing. But, you know, on a Saturday, there's no company around. And I like to put on that old sweater when it's kind of cold or a little nip in the air and wear that thing around. And I wore that thing downstairs one day for lunch. And my little girl was sitting there. She's 8 years old. And she took one look at me and she said, "Dad, you look like Mr. Rogers." And I probably did. I was in Chicago in that area and went out after church on a Sunday night with a bunch of teenagers. There were about 25 of us. And sat around eating pizza and having a good time and talking and that kind of thing. And the kids got to talking about some silly things their parents did. And one girl said, "My dad's a geek." Well, what that means, if you don't understand the lingo, is that means that her dad's not always with it. He's not up to date in some areas, and that kind of bothered me because I'd been with her dad a lot that week, and I really thought he was a pretty cool guy. You know, that kind of bothered me a little bit. And the girl sitting next to her said, "My dad's a nerd." And I agreed with her. I've been around. She was right on. Now I want to tell you something. You may not think that your parents know very much at all. You may think your parents are old-fashioned. You may think they're out of date. You may think they do dumb, geek, nerdy things. Whatever. You may think their clothes are from the 40s or 50s or whenever it was. They may call a stereo a phonograph and that kind of thing. They may use all kinds of antiquated expressions. They may think a CD is something you put money in rather than something that plays the best kind of music. They may not know all of those things. And you may roll your eyes and you may say, "Oh, Dad, oh, Mom." But I want to tell you something. In all seriousness, they love you. And they want the very best for you. And my message to you tonight is, cut them some slack. Give them a chance. Don't shut them out of your life. Listen to them. It may surprise you that their counsel may be pretty wise after all. Talk to them. Keep the lines of communication open. And above all, love them. And give them a chance to love you too. And one more thing, do it now. Do it now. I lost my mother. Back in 1985. And I believe I'd give anything for just one more chance, one more opportunity to just sit and talk with her. And bless your heart, I will one day. I will. But I can't do it today. And it hurts. You can talk to a tombstone all day long, but they don't talk back. Do it now. Don't let a rebellious spirit creep into your life and sour you on life and ruin what should be the best days of your life. Because you'll dig you a hole that maybe you'll never escape from. Don't do it. And there's one more thing that Solomon says, and the lesson is yours. He says, put away pain. Put away pain from your body, verse 10. Remove vexation from your heart. Put away pain from your body. Now, I take that literal, by the way. I think what Solomon is saying to us is, get rid of anything that will bring pain to the body. Young people, you need to take a good, long, hard look at what alcohol will do to a body. And I want to tell you something. People can deny it all they want to, but alcohol is a drug. It induces a chemical dependency and a mind-altering effect. And it doesn't make any difference if it's legalized for people over 18 or 21 or not. It is a drug. And the effect that it can have on a life is no different from crack or cocaine or any other mind-altering drug. And you need to stay away from that. Solomon says, don't get into that. Stay away from drugs. Look at the effects that tobacco can have on a life down the road. Don't skirt the issue. If you're old enough to be a teenager, you need to be mature enough to face the facts. There are certain things that are available out there, and you can get them. And it may be cool, may be the end thing, but you'll pay the price. And I'll guarantee you, a few years down the road, you will have wished that when you were 16 or 17 or 12 or 13, whatever the case may be, that you didn't do those things. Solomon is saying middle age is great. He's saying old age is great. But I think his point here is if you don't listen to what he's saying right here, you may never get to experience middle age or old age or any other age because you may not live long enough to get there. And if you don't believe that, you need to talk to the Boston Celtics number one draft choice of 3 years ago. A guy out of College Park, Maryland, named Lenny Bias, who was drafted number one in pro basketball by the Celtics, and he went to Boston for a news conference. Pictures were taken. He flew back to College Park, Maryland, got with his buddies that night from the basketball team, thought they'd do a little cocaine to celebrate, and they did, and he died. And they buried him 3 days later. Solomon says, put away pain from your body. And let me say this, while we're on that same point, young people, put a lid on your sex drive. 2 Timothy 2, verse 22, Paul said, flee youthful lust. Just a little experiment in that area could ruin you for life, can scar you for life. Venereal disease and AIDS has reached epidemic proportions, and they're not to be laughed at anymore. And I'll just talk plain. I'll just talk plain if I can. When you have a sexual experience with someone, you are having a sexual experience with every person that person ever had a sexual experience with, and that's scary. The Surgeon General said if we're going to solve the AIDS epidemic, we've got to restrain the sexual relations to a married partner. Good advice. And you know, God said that a long time ago. You see, it's too great a risk. It's not only wrong, but it'll scar you for life, and it may shorten your life, and it's too great a risk to take. Save yourself for marriage. Offer your husband, offer your wife the best present that you could ever give them, and that's the purity of an unpolluted body. I saw a scary statistic the other day that said 40% of Christian young people, and I recognize the term Christian there is used in a very liberal sense, but 40% of, may we say, basically good moral people who in some way, shape, or form make a claim to godly principles, 40% of those young people engage in premarital sex. What that says is we're living in an age where people who claim to be very religious are very loose, sexually speaking. Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 that if you are a Christian, that Jesus Christ dwells within you. That He has become a part of your life. What that says is, when you mess around as a young person who is a Christian, when you mess around, Jesus Christ is there with you. You don't leave Him outside of the car. You don't leave Him outside of the room. He is there with you. Some people say, well, the only person ever affected by my actions is me. Wrong. If you're a Christian, what you do not only affects you, it hurts Him. You see, every time we sin, we crucify the Son of God all over again. Sin is not just going out and breaking God's rules. Sin is going out and breaking God's heart. And when Christian young people do their thing in the backseat of a car, or they do their thing in a bedroom because their parents are not home, and they're latchkey kids and they rush home. And by the way, that's where most immorality is occurring today, is in the home after school. You see, the kids don't have to go to the cars and the drive-ins anymore. And when you're doing your thing, young people, I wish you could hear the agonizing screams of Jesus Christ. I wish you could hear Jesus crying. I wish you could experience the pain that is going through His heart at the moment that you're prostituting your body. What are you saying? Sex is dirty? No. God designed the human body for sexual enjoyment, and He also prescribed how to maximize that enjoyment in the marriage relationship. Hebrews 13:4. Marriage is honorable among all, and the bed, that is the marriage bed, is undefiled. And any sexual activity other than that with a married partner is defiled. It is dirty. It's only when the sexual union enhances a love relationship in the state of a marriage that God recognizes, does it become explosively wonderful and as it should be. What are you saying? I'm saying the only person you have a right to take physical liberties with is your husband, is your wife, and nobody else. Now, parents, this is where we talk to you. Do you realize the emotional fires that burn in young people? You better watch what occurs in your home that could possibly feed those emotional raging fires. Television is an avenue that you better be careful about. And may I say this, and some people may not like this, but I don't care. The pay movie channels, would you please tell me what business they have in a Christian's home? Now, I recognize every now and then there may be something good come on. I'm not talking about cable TV that you subscribe to so that you can get a picture in your house. That's okay. I don't have a problem with that. I'm talking about HBO. I'm talking about Cinemax. I'm talking about all of these pay movie channels that you have to pay a fortune for. And my question is, what for? Are they things that are decent and upright? Are they things that are going to help your young people? Can you always guarantee that you're there to provide supervision for what they're watching? Or may it be, if you're not careful, that you may be guilty of throwing gasoline on an emotional raging fire that burns in an adolescent young person? Please be careful. Because that responsibility, I think, is just as much up to the parent. One final thing, and we're done, and that is, young people, obey the law. Obey the law. A few years ago, we had some items from our house stolen, and we had to go to court. I had to appear as a witness for the state's prosecution. They caught the guy. And I had to sit through all day court proceedings and other cases before our case was called. There was some woman there that had written a bunch of bad checks to some local stores, and she was dealt with. There was some person there that had ripped off a bunch of television sets from JCPenney, and the judge didn't think too lightly of that. And I had to deal with that kind of person. There was an 18-year-old young lady, a freshman at the University of Maryland, who got with a bunch of her friends one Friday evening, and they drove through the drive-in of a McDonald's in College Park, and on a dare, they ordered all their food, and then they drove off without paying for it. It wasn't much, just $5 or $6. But McDonald's prosecuted, and this lady was brought to court. And when the clerk of the court read the charge, everybody in the courtroom, as I looked around, and she had a lot of her friends with her, and they were all there to give her some moral support, as she stood before the judge, and as the words were read, they all laughed. They all kind of giggled a little bit, and the girl kind of giggled, and she turned around and faced all of her friends, and they were all giggling, and before you know it, everybody in the courtroom was kind of giggling. How silly! How silly to come into court over something like $5 of food. How ridiculous. And everybody's kind of laughing about that. There was one fellow there that didn't get the joke. And he sat behind the bench. And he waited until it all got quiet. He said, "Bailiff, come here, please." The bailiff got up and walked to the bench. He said, "Bailiff, would you please step out in the hall and bring me the sheriff? We have a prisoner." And he did. And the sheriff walked into the courtroom very briskly and up to the bench. And he said, "Sheriff, would you please handcuff this lady and take her to jail?" The whole day went by. And late afternoon, he called for her and brought her back, and she was still in handcuffs. And this time she wasn't laughing. This time she was in tears. And he said unto her, "Young lady, what you did was wrong. You stole what wasn't yours, and it doesn't make any difference to me if it was $5 or $500 or $5,000. I don't care. You took what wasn't yours. You're a thief. And you stand in jeopardy of a criminal record for the rest of your life." And her daddy came, and the judge said, "I'm not through with you yet. You go into my chambers, and when I'm finished with everybody else, we've still got some things to talk about." And he sentenced that girl to 30 days of community service and a fine of $300. Young people, don't do something just because somebody eggs you on and dares you to do it that you know is wrong. It's a violation of the law. Because chances are you'll get caught. And even if you might get away with it, God's watching, and He sees. And Solomon says He'll bring you into judgment for all these things. Now look at the end of verse 10. Why? Why remove vexation? Why put away pain? Because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. You only have one childhood. You only have one adolescence. You only have one prime of life, and they're fleeting. In other words, what you do today will determine the memories that you'll make tomorrow. I hope that you'll work very hard to make sure that in a few years, when you're old, like Brother Gertler over here, or Brother Bob, that you'll be able to look back on these years and feel good because you enjoyed your life, you had some fun that was proper, you didn't go too far, you stayed in bounds, you refused to be ruled by a rebellious spirit, and you removed pain from your body. You didn't have anything to do with those things. And you also, chapter 12 and verse 1, you remembered your Creator in the days of your youth. I don't know of any more positive thing to say about a local church than to get a good glimpse and a good picture of the young people that are being raised among its members. and I see something good here. I go some places to preach, and you got to chase kids out in the parking lot to get them to shake your hand. They think you're some kind of fella from a foreign planet or something, you know, and they don't have anything to do with you. And as soon as the amen is said, out they go, off they go. And they're not here because they want to be. They're not interested. They don't listen. They don't care. And I don't get that feeling here. And I don't get that feeling with some other young people that I've seen here from other places. And that's good. And I appreciate that. And that says something good about you. That says something good about your parents. And that says something good about your Bible class teachers. And that says something good about the men who are the spiritual leaders of this congregation or wherever it is that you're from. I'm going to sing the song of invitation tonight. I appreciate your attention. I don't like generally to preach as long as I have tonight, but I think you understand the need. And as we sing the song of invitation, if you need to respond to the gospel tonight, don't put it off any longer. Remember thy Creator in the days of your youth. The best time to obey Christ, the best time to be a Christian is when you're young. Because then you can give a lot of extra energy that you may not have later on in life. You can give it to the Lord right now. And you can leave here tonight a Christian being baptized for the remission of your sins, a new child of God. Maybe you are a Christian and maybe you just haven't lived like one should. And we encourage you tonight, if that be your situation, to get your life right with God and to respond to the invitation while together we stand and sing.